Because it's Pokemon! It's get the Pokemons! And...
It get the Pokemon, but in Magikarp.
Ah, oh, I've missed you, Em. Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 397. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is the return of Emily Soden.
I am alive and I am back.
Yeah, and we're delighted to have you. Don't leave me with Glenn. I've told you before.
I'm sorry, I couldn't. It was unavoidable. I promise, honey, I will never do it again.
Oh, right, I suppose. Honestly, as the viewers will tell you, and listeners, because it's a podcast, not a TV show. it's been a terrible time. Glenn keeps saying hello in that way he does. It's never going to go away.
Hello there.
Yeah, no.
Should I bring him back? Is Glenn in the room with me now?
The spirit of Glenn. No, he's off doing worky things, so it's just the two of us today for a bit. However, as you all know, we've changed our format, so we have a sort of interview section in the middle. Today, we are going to be doing a grand old E3 chat with a few other members of our PG family. Because E3, it's on the horizon, it's coming soon, and there's much to discuss. But before we get anywhere near that, how about some news from this week? So there's been much discussion about the Nintendo Switch's online service. Now, I'm not a Switch owner, you are, Em, we know this.
Yes, yes, yes.
I can sense your smuggery just coursing through the cables of my headphones right now. Oh, it's warming my heart. It really is. But the online service, the question's been, A, how much are they going to charge for it? And then B, is it going to be worth any of it? Because at the moment, the Nintendo service, you can go online and do all the online stuff for free. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. At the moment, it's like until 2018, this whole thing is like a taster.
Okay.
And it's just like, they just can take it away from you, like, at the end of the year. Be like, ha, now you got to pay.
Which is probably a good idea in terms of getting people accustomed to the service for a while, and then they'll suddenly feel its absence, and maybe they'll want to pay. It's that first taste is free kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bearing that in mind, how much is it going to cost? We have got the official prices from Nintendo themselves. So, as it turns out, if you are in the States, it's going to cost you, I'll do the 12-month thing first, $19.99, or if you're in Europe, €19.99, which is a fairly good deal exchange rate wise. So, $20 for 12 months. How do we feel about that, Em?
In honesty, I think it's an okay deal. Like, if you think about going up to a club or a restaurant or something, you know, $20 is like a few drinks or a burger and a piece of cake or something.
Burger and cake.
Yeah, sorry, I went straight to that instead of doing, salads and fruit, healthy things.
Or even PSN or Xbox Live. You just went straight to the food analogy.
I'm really hungry, okay? I haven't had lunch yet.
Superb, no, me neither. I would agree with you. I consider that quite reasonable, especially as your PS Plus and things, they cost around the £35 to £40 mark, RRP. Anyway, so it's half the price of that. That's pretty good. What you get for it is the ability to play online and do voice chat in-game, so very much similar to, you know, Xbox Live, for example, Xbox Gold. You also get the ability to download classic titles, which apparently have added online play. So you get things like Super Mario Bros. 3, Dr. Mario, Balloon Fight. Those are the ones they mentioned. And also some special subscriber-only offers and potential discounts. Which puts me in mind of the PS Plus subscriber, you know, we get slight reductions compared to if you don't have a membership when you buy stuff online.
It's worth it though, isn't it? I mean, like, I think originally Nintendo were looking at the whole downloading, having a catalogue of old games you can download and stuff. They were only going to release like one a month or something.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided to scrap that and be like, okay, no, just put them all out there and then off you go. And of course, the discounts and stuff, if the discount thing turns out to be legit, that's going to be not a game changer, but it's going to be quite tempting. But like, if you're not that bothered about the online play or anything like that, to have that option of having like a couple of quid shaved off an otherwise really expensive game, I mean, it's great.
Yeah, because Nintendo games do tend to keep their price and veer towards the more costly end of the spectrum, especially if it's a port from another platform. They tend to be more pricey on Switch than they are on any other platform. So if you get a few quid off, you know, maybe after you bought three or four games, it'll have paid for itself. It does beg the question, like, how good are the additional games going to be? So they've mentioned three there. I wonder how much more they're going to bring on and give you for free. Obviously, the Nintendo back catalogue is huge, and the irony is you've probably already bought the game three times already on your Wii and then your Wii U and all the rest of it. But they do have a sweet library that they can pull from to throw tempting, like, hey, have some more Mario, have some more whatever.
Have some Zelda.
Have some Zelda.
Go with that one.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, 2018 is when that's going to kick in. We'll let you know as soon as we get the UK pounds price. They haven't given us that yet. But, you know, it'll probably be doubled because of Brexit tariffs. So, Framed 2. Moving swiftly on. We've been waiting for this for ages. I did a hands-on video with this 6 months ago when we got in touch with the developer, Love Shack Entertainment, and we had a bash at it. And you know what? It's very good. I only played the first 10 minutes or so because I wasn't allowed to play any more than that on video anyway. And if you played the first one, it's the one where the game looks like a comic book panel, and then you're moving panels around so that a guy can run from panel to get to the end panel without having his briefcase yoinked off him or being chased by a dog or shot by a policeman or just stopped by an open door or something like that.
I watched the recent, like, have you seen the most recent trailer from this morning? It looked so good.
Yeah.
I've got such a soft spot for, like, noir, that kind of art style and that kind of theme. It tickles me right up.
It's fun. And the first game I played when I was in Colombia, I played through that game over Christmas one time, which was a lot of fun. It's not super long. You can bash through the whole thing in like an hour or two, provided you can get your head around the puzzles. But it's lovely. It's silent storytelling. It was clever. It was unique. It was a game of the year. Hideo Kojima's game of the year, actually. So the sequel is something to be excited about. Go and see our video that's already been up there to whet your appetite a little bit. And the date it will be out is 14th of June. So that is basically 2 weeks' time. You'll be able to grab it. And this is something we're very excited for. You should be too. Perhaps less excited. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I should say that. There's been these rumours floating around for ages about Mario Kingdom Battle. Specifically Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Yeah.
A few people in the press have been kind of going, oh, we reckon there's going to be this Mario Rabbids game. And people have been like, Mario Rabbids? A-list Mario with, at best, D-list Rabbids? What are you chatting about? This is insane. And then a few, like, bits of art appeared, which looked sort of legit. And then Nintendo went, oh, no, 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 no. Or people just started denying it and retracting it. And then the Japan Expo Twitter account this week tweeted out in French about an exclusive video of Mario cross Lapin, which is rabbit in French for all you Europhiles.
Yeah.
It's probably happening. We're going to get Mario and Rabbids.
If it turns out to be legit, someone's going to be in really big trouble for that.
I don't know if they are leaking this stuff on purpose to test the ground, or if people just genuinely, like, messing up the Twitters and going, whoops.
Yeah. To be fair, like, if I was Nintendo, I would leak the crap out of my own game, because you look at the amount of press that has been generated because of it. Anytime there's a Mario leak story, I'm on it like a fly on poo.
Exactly. Like Rabbids on a Mario license. So
yeah, exactly.
What we've got from it is it seems to be an RPG, if it's true. Nintendo World Report gave us some images and bits and bobs, and it suggests it's an RPG that's going to be a two-player cooperative one, if you want to play it that way. There'll be 8 playable characters, 4 of them being Mario types, like Mario, Luigi, and Peach, and then the other 4 being Rabbids. Although, in the images that we've got, the Rabbids are dressed up like Luigi and Princess Peach. Cosplay style.
I really, really hope, deep down in my heart, I know it's really disappointing when images and stuff like this gets, like, leaked early and the surprise is kind of gone, but I kind of really hope that this turns out to be legit, because it actually genuinely looks great.
The art style's wicked. Like, it looks lovely. It's all cartoon. You can see the images up on PG. They've all got these big blaster guns, and it looks like it's going to... They're going for zany. Clearly going for zany with this one. And the emphasis looks to be on action. Action RPG, silliness, rabbits. It could be fun. I'm not a big fan of the rabbits. I'll say that. But I've played some of the
games. They're the minions of gaming, aren't they?
That's actually quite a good analogy, yeah. If you're kids, then maybe they're the coolest thing ever. But if you're older than 15, I think they wear a little bit thin after a while. They're so wacky.
It's like, I don't know, are they delicious? I don't know. I'm not sure
they are. But Mario games tend to veer towards being good rather than bad on the whole, so let's hope they do a good thing with it. We will have to wait and see if it's confirmed, but keep your eyes out for Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle. Sticking with the old licenses, given new life, Sonic Mania! We've got a release date for that as well. It's coming to Nintendo Switch on August 15th. You just pushed up a new trailer of this, didn't you? They've got a pretty trailer with, like, looks like the Take On Me video, with it all being hand-drawn.
Yeah, have you properly watched it?
Yeah, I've watched it.
Yeah, I admit, I've been looking forward to Sonic Mania because Sonic was, like, my childhood game. Like, that's one of the first ones I remember, apart from DuckTales, the first one I remember playing on Mega Drive.
Okay.
And when I watched that trailer, I mean, I love Take On Me anyway, so the whole artistic kind of sketchy style, and then they're sort of going through it. The animation is really fluid, and then there's that bit, I don't know, you probably would have noticed it because you've got a good eye, but the bit where he's going, like, looping round, and it changes between Sonic, Tails and Knuckles as they go. I mean, that bit just made me all tingly.
With a nice cross-cutting of all of our favourite hedgehogs. And
yeah, and I was clapping to myself, and I was going, yes, I'm very excited about this now, because it looks great.
Well, for me, this is kind of Sega's last chance to get Sonic right. They've been round and round the houses with their 3D versions and their colours and their not-quite-hoverboard racing games and Boom and all the other ones that really didn't work for people. And they've just, even their, you know, Sonic Episode 4 thing didn't really work either. So they've just gone, screw it, we're just going to remake that first game that everybody loved and hope we get it right.
Yeah, but that's what I love about that, though, don't you? Is that they've tried so hard for the past, like, 10 years, and it's just been like, okay, no, we'll just redo the first two, it's fine. Or three, rather.
Which is a sad state to be in. Like, I do think it's, I mean, right down to the art style, it's a bit tragic that that's the only mode in which Sonic seems to work.
Yeah, but I don't like the 3D stuff, because it's not what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be 2D and pixelated and retro and that sort of stuff. I don't like it when they try and make it into something that it's not, which is funny because Mario has sometimes somehow worked like that when Sonic hasn't.
Well, the thing is, Mario going 3D, A, the level design was just better, and B, it's not based on speed. Controlling a 2D platformer where your character rockets along at light speed, along a set line, you know, and you don't have to go left or right or anything, you just go forward. That's much more manageable than trying to control a 3D Sonic, like, from a third-person perspective, Uncharted style, where he's running at light speed, because you just run straight off the end of the platform before you realise it. And that was the problem with some of the... I remember the Sonic platformer that was on the Xbox 360. That was shockingly bad. I can't remember which one it was. But, it's just borderline uncontrollable. The speed that is inherent to Sonic, that what makes Sonic Sonic, doesn't really work in third-person 3D.
Yeah.
So
I was well done by Sonic Generations.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's not, there's no talk about that.
The dark times, we don't trust this. So, August 15th on Nintendo Switch. It's going to be a bit on the maybe more expensive than I was expecting. So $19.99 is what it's going out on Steam and Xbox. I wouldn't be surprised if it was that price, if not maybe more, on the Switch.
Yeah, I'm expecting it to be slightly more, because the Switch, if it depends whether it's like going to be digital or cartridge form as well, because like, for whatever reason, well, I mean, we all know the reasons, but Switch games are more expensive than any other kind of platformer, so I'm expecting it to kind of raise to like 21 or 22 maybe.
Sure. Or if you're feeling incredibly flush, the collector's edition version is a snip at $70 from US stores,
but they do have a little figure that like plays the Sega theme.
Yeah, well, that's worth your £80 right there. Deluxe box Sega cartridge with a gold ring in it, and a little 12-inch statue. Does he wag his finger at me? If I get him going me, and he actually wags his finger at me disapprovingly, then I will get it.
Yeah, no, that's sort of, if it wagged its finger at you, that's the kind of thing you'd want to bring out shopping with you. So if you ever got tempted, you just press the Sega button and then you go, oh. And you'd be like, okay, Sonic, okay, I get it.
All right, man. Easy tiger. Yeah, so look forward to that. And finally, for the news bit, you've had Pokemon Go, you've had Magikarp Jump, which is the thing I just reviewed with a slightly perplexed look on my face. So watch that video. The new one, the new Pokemon app that's coming to your iPhones and iPads and all Androids and that, Pokeland, is currently looking for alpha testers to try out the brand new game. It's a, well, apparently Pokemon Rumble style game, according to what you've written, Em. So, little, like, mini fig Pokemon. I've just seen the Pikachu one, and he's adorable. Fight on islands.
Yeah, it was like a couple of still images, and then just the rest was, oh, yeah, alpha testing, Japan, yeah, you know, get on it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, okay.
It's all Japanese text. But if you go to our site, the way that they're doing it is the first 10,000 participants can get into the Android-only alpha test if they apply between now and June the 9th. So if you want to, there is still a week of alpha testing you might be able to participate in. Be the first person to get in on this bizarre ground floor that is Pokeland. So if you want to give it a try, go to the front cover of, the, of your Pocket Gamer.
Front cover?
Yeah, the double-sided front cover that's on Pocket Gamer that you get now delivered to your door. And you can go and apply if you want and play some Pokemon first. Or just catch a sad-looking Magikarp.
Magikarps are pretty sad-looking, aren't they?
They're tragic things. Every time it jumped in the air and came down and landed, I thought it had died. So for our interview chat section this week, we're doing something slightly different because we're interviewing one of our very own, Simon Drake. Hello, sir.
Hello. It's very good to be on this podcast, finally.
How are you doing and what is it that you do?
Yeah, I'm very good. Really excited for E3, which I suppose is convenient given this talk. But yeah, for all the listeners, I'm the developer relations and VR manager. So I cover getting out to shows, meeting people, playing lots of games, both mobile and VR. And I also run aspects like our VR shows and, importantly, our indie developer competitions like the Big Indie Pitch.
Yes, which is going to affect E3 this year because we're out there, as we always are, looking at the games and hosting stuff too. Before we get to the whole Big Indie Pitch angle, which we'll talk about, what I really want to chat about is what everybody here is interested in for E3 this year. So it's just 2 weeks away or so, just under that. And you guys are both Switch people, as we've already discussed.
Yeah.
And before we get to the mobile tie-in stuff, I get the impression that it's going to be a big old year for the Switchy stuff. What are you both looking forward to? Start with you, Simon. What are you holding out for?
I think there's a range of things. Obviously, I want to learn more about Super Mario Odyssey. That's a given. We know it's happening, but I want to understand more. Because right now, it's got this sort of weird Sonic Adventure vibe where he's in the real world, but then he's mixing into other worlds. So I definitely want to learn more about that. I'm sure it will be awesome. But that's why I want to learn more. Aside from that, the age-old question that's always thrown around is, what are retro studios up to? I mean, I'd love nothing more than for them to announce a new Metroid game. It doesn't even need to be coming out this year. Just to know that it's in existence would be fantastic. I mean, either that or them being working on a new Donkey Kong Country. I loved Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze.
That's what people have said about this year, particularly with the Switch, is that obviously they've done very, very well for themselves with Breath of the Wild being as successful and as good as it is. But there's still been a lot of silence on the rest of the important topics. So Mario Odyssey, that was already announced, but there are these ones waiting in the wings. So we're like, a Metroid would be nice. Where's the Metroid? And
I mean, anyone who knows me will know I'm a massive retro gamer. So I think an easy win for Nintendo and something that I would be able to get excited about would be more information on the Virtual Console. I think there's also a lot of back activity that could get them a lot of easy wins in terms of the wider gaming audience and the core audience. Core audience specifically would be to announce something like Mother 3, the sequel to Mother 2, which most people in the West will know as Earthbound.
Yeah, I say that's going back quite a long way.
Yeah, but it's been, you know, shouted about for years. And actually, it was either last year or the year before, I believe the year before, Nintendo actually even teased it in their Direct, which was really strange. And at that point, it came to Virtual Console for the Wii U in Japan, but we've heard nothing of it in the West. ever. And it would be great to have Lucas's adventure, because most people know the character from Smash Brothers.
I'm not really for those cross-universe mashups. They kind of offend me on a continuity level. They shouldn't, but they do. They're just weird. What about stuff like... I mean, were you ever an F-Zero fan, Emily? Did you play the old Nintendo racers?
No, do you know what? I was... This is where you're going to see the complete division between me and Drake here, is because I was always a Sony girl. Yeah, so I grew up with PlayStations and Mega Drives, and like, I know that's Sega, but shush!
But you're newer to the world of like Nintendo handhelds.
Yeah, yeah, because I never had, like, apart from the Wii for like a year or something like that, which of course you've got now, James.
I'm enjoying the past. It's lovely.
But I never had a Nintendo console growing up. I was very much Sega and PlayStation oriented and PC. Okay. So I missed out on all of that stuff in my childhood. So I'm kind of just experiencing all the stuff now.
Okay. Well, in that case, they should definitely get an F-Zero out for you then, because that was another classic franchise that would work really well. I mean, they've got the new remaster of Wipeout. So Wipeout Omega is coming out like in a week on consoles, which I'm getting because I love that franchise. But it would be nice to see a new flashy one on Switch.
I would absolutely love that. I mean, we had the F-Zero on GameCube, which was a phenomenal game. And that, if I'm not mistaken, is the last we've really heard of it. I mean, interestingly, that had Sega involved at the same time. So, you know, you could have a really good crossover for you there, Emily. I mean, on the Sega front, I mean, this is the thing that's quite interesting about Switch. We're all talking about a lot of retro titles and bringing them back and, you know, remixing them and all that side of things. One of the most exciting games, which obviously, you know, is on PlayStation and Xbox as well, but is coming to Switch, is Sonic Mania. And having played that quite a few times at various other shows, I can honestly say from what I've played, it is phenomenal. It's pitch perfect to the classic Sonic games, and it will be perfect for Switch as well.
We were discussing that exact thing earlier, along with that Rabbids RPG mashup. What do you make of that?
Very, very curious and strange. I mean, my instant gut reaction, which I try not to go to a lot, is, ugh, why are we doing this? This is rubbish. But
I've seen a lot of that.
Yeah, but I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. I mean, literally all we've got is an image. And so we don't know what that means. It could be a party game. It could be, you know, an adventure game. I think it's probably a party game. But it depends who's involved in the production of it. Is it solely a Ubisoft or a Nintendo involved? I mean, there's so many variables. So, if anything, I'm excited to see that at E3, whether it's just to go, boo, or to go, yeah, that's quite good, actually. That looks all right. I'll give it a go. I mean, we had a similar thing with Federation Force, where everyone was like, oh, what a load of rubbish. We've announced Federation Force for 3DS. It's not the Metroid game we want. But actually, when it came out, people were like, if you step away from the fact that this is a Metroid game, the game itself is actually not bad.
And that was the problem, because I played that when I was out at E3, and I'm not being super tied into the Metroid franchise at that point, personally.
Yeah.
I played it and went, this is sort of quite good fun. I can understand why people would be disappointed when they were maybe expecting or wanting a proper, fully-fledged Metroid game, which would... Now we've got the dual sticks now on the Switch. That'd be nice. That's helpful with your first-person business.
Aside from Nintendo Switch, I think I'm actually excited to see some of the 3DS games that are still being announced, because whilst we're winding down 3DS, I still love the console, and I've got this ages-long back catalogue to get through, so it's nice to see what's coming still to 3DS. Like, last year I made a beeline for Natsume's booth, where they were showing Wild Guns Reloaded. I mean, this year they've got the new River City Ransom, which is a series that's been going for years in Japan. It's actually celebrating its 30th anniversary, but most people in the West might know it from River City Ransom on the NES. That should be quite exciting as well from a Nintendo handheld point of view.
The install base of the 3DS is still so massive. And with the release of that new 2DS as well, they're still sort of trying to keep the thing alive.
It's really interesting, actually. Lots of people said that when Switch came out, it would be the end for 3DS, but it's proving that it probably won't. I mean, I think they're different enough that one is appealing to a market for an audience that maybe have only ever played mobile phones but want to have something else. So it's got this cheaper price point, especially with the 2DS XL. And it's got this wide range of titles that everyone actually already knows the brands. You know, you've got multiple different Pokemon games, you know, multiple Zelda games, a lot of which are actually N64 and Super Nintendo re-releases, which is fantastic. So I think there is still a lot of life in the 3DS. Whether that's from a point of view of more games, though, is a completely different kettle of fish.
when it comes to the main E3 conference, we're going to be seeing lots of stuff from all the major parties. So Sony and Microsoft will be there, and then you get, you know, Ubi and Bethesda and EA and all that. So they'll be pushing their console titles. What often comes in alongside that is either tie-ins in companion app style to the main console games, or little spin-offs. So in previous years, Square Enix Montreal have announced their ongoing Go series. So we've had Lara Croft, we've had Hitman, and then most recently we've had Deus Ex. I'm wondering what their next installment might be. I don't know if we'd see it this year, perhaps next year, but what would be the next Squeenix Go game?
The thing is, the Go is quite a Western-focused audience, and you know, so, but I was thinking maybe they might try and do more with the Nier Automata license, or Nier license. Oh, yeah. I mean, Hitman's definitely not happening. We know that.
No, that's a sad thing, isn't it? That's gone. They're teaming up with the Bulletstorm guys. Could have a Bulletstorm Go. How would that work? Lots of swearing.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's, you know, maybe the best audience. But, I mean, arguably, that it could work from a, you know, a gameplay point of view quite easily.
Yeah. Funny thing about it all is that whenever you mentioned any of those franchises, you didn't necessarily associate them with that almost tabletop board game turn-based thing, but they managed to convert them so well. Those games just sort of exist on their own. You're like, oh, okay. Tell you what I considered, and I know it's a smaller thing and they're only publishing it, is Life is Strange.
Oh, do you know what? That'd I would excellent. Absolutely adore if they made one of those.
Because Life is Strange has already got that time reversal mechanic built into it. That could be used really well in a Go format.
Yeah, I got so excited the other day when I saw Life was Strange was trending on Twitter, and I was like, Life is Strange 2! And then it was just like, no, it's on PS Plus. I was like, no!
Well, there was news like this week about potentially a prequel from another studio.
Yeah.
And they've obviously confirmed that the second one is happening. So there's potentially two games to look forward to.
I mean, and I think we'll probably hear more about that at E3, definitely. I mean, going back to the Square Enix side of things, I know it's not, maybe not a Go title, but I think one game we should probably be prepared for a mobile tie-in at some point very soon, even if just to keep the buzz going, would be something like Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
we had a mobile game then late last year, early this year, some free-to-play one that turned up, which was sort of a very loose, like, RPG. Very pretty, but I don't think it made a huge impact anywhere.
No, I think we may find something that tries to tie into the larger world of Kingdom Hearts 3, which, you know, hopefully is coming at some point in the near future. Maybe we'll hear more about that soon. It's the same idea that I think Square Enix have done quite a lot with Final Fantasy VII, but they did it back in the days when we before smartphones. But they had a lot of tie-ins to Final Fantasy VII that sadly never made their way over here. Just to try and keep that buzz and support going for the title and, well, the compilation. Maybe they'll do the same with Kingdom Hearts. I mean, we've had Kingdom Hearts 2.8 recently. I'm not sure we can go much closer to 3.
Running out of decimals here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the big releases that we're expecting to see, so Star Wars Battlefront 2 will get a lot of attention, I think, and I have to imagine that more Destiny 2 hype is going to appear. But all we've ever got from those from mobile has been, like, those companion apps where you can just, like, you know, look at your character and spin them around. I'm still waiting for them to do something substantial with those licenses. Like, they're sitting there, and if the Montreal, you know, Square Enix lot have proved anything, is that you can make it work on a touchscreen in its own little universe.
I mean, I wonder if we're going to see more action from Sony in terms of mobile tie-ins, actually. We had Uncharted, what was it, Fortune Hunter?
Oh, God.
Fairly recently.
Oh, no, that was all right, actually. Yeah, sorry.
And that had that puzzle feel to it. And I wonder if now that the Vita is somewhat scaling back, it's scaling back to the point of Sony aren't releasing first-party titles for it. So maybe we're going to see more action from that. I mean, it would be great to see some sort of tie-in to something like The Last of Us, which I'm sure we're going to learn more about in the, you know, coming weeks at E3.
Mm. Yeah, that would make sense.
God of War is another one that they could arguably do some kind of tie-in for as well.
And I suppose, I mean, there's Far Cry 5, which is getting all that hype and attention now, so maybe they could do something with that. Funny enough, like when Ubisoft are concerned, they have done a lot of things on mobile. Like the Assassin's Creed mobile games are numerous and plentiful. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did something with Far Cry 5.
Yeah.
I think Far Cry 5 is a really good shout, especially if they want to continue to ride this wave. I mean, I know there's been some negative controversy around Far Cry 5, but, you know, controversy sells, and that's just great for continuing the buzz of a series that had become a bit samey. And I think the same could be said for Assassin's Creed. You know, they've taken their paws on this. And so bringing that back with a tie-in as well to keep the buzz going would be really good. I think the problem that Ubisoft have maybe faced a bit too much is using the word tie-in. They've tried to connect them and tie these titles in, whereas what's made the Go game so good is that they're separate experiences that utilize the IP, but have a unique gameplay and attract maybe a different set of audience along with the audience that's already, you know, loves that franchise.
Well, you're going to be out there in person at the E3 event, but we're also going to be running one of our big indie pitches, which if you listen to the podcast regularly, you know what I'm talking about. But for those of you who don't know, what's a big indie pitch?
So the big indie pitch is something that I'm really passionate about. It's our leading indie developer competition. We invite indie devs who are working on mobile or portable titles to come along, showcase their games that are in development, or maybe those that have just been recently developed and they're looking to do revisions and updates. We put them in front of multiple tables of expert judges, which include people representing the likes of Amazon, Samsung, EA, Unity, and a range of other, you know, journalistic publications, of course, including Pocket Gamer. And the developers get, you know, 4 minutes with each set of judges, and they get to pitch their games. They get instant feedback to help, you know, work on their games. And they get to make some great connections. And then we have a range of prizes at the end as well. And of course, we cover all of the games in our roundup articles and articles about the winners as well. So there's some great exposure. It's also for the consumers out there. It's just a great chance to learn about a lot of brand new indie titles that are being worked on in the mobile scene that, you know, maybe might get lost in amongst all of the other games that come out on a regular basis.
That's always been the fun bit for me, because we've all participated in these over the years, and it's when you get to see something that you would not otherwise have seen. It was happening again this year, and there is still chances to sign up, right? How do they do that? If you're listening now and you're developing a game, you're on the West Coast, how do you get involved?
Definitely. If you want to be involved in our E3 Big Indie Pitch, whether you're on the West Coast or whether you're just attending E3 in general, head over to the sister site, pocketgamer.biz. You'll notice on the right-hand side our events. Just click on the Big Indie Pitch, and it's got all the details for, you know, what you need, what you might want to know, and also how to register your game. On that page as well, there's also my email address. Anyone's welcome to email me. Ask me any questions you like.
All right, then. Well, good luck over there. We will be checking back with you to see how you got on.
Definitely.
And we will no doubt speak to you shortly. Enough of E3, out and about this week. A crazy taxi gazillionaire, which... you know what? That's pretty much the noise I made as well. So there should be, by now, a video of this up on AppSpy. And Crazy Taxi's already appeared on Android and iPhone, the old, you know, original game version of it. And it's sort of all right, doesn't work quite so well as it does on controllers, but whatever. They haven't done that this time. This is sort of a clicker. The idea is you're the guy running the cab service. That's as far as I can make out, anyway. I've played this for about, like, 45 minutes now. And you control the taxis running around the map that is the city, collecting fares by tapping on them. So you start out with one taxi, you tap a fare, it goes... Meow-zum. That's the noise a car makes, by the way. Mm-hmm. Cars powered by cats now.
Yep.
They go and pick up a fare, you get some money, and you keep doing that. Whenever a fare appears as a dot on the map, you tap it, boom, Cargos gets it, and that's it. You collect some money. You then upgrade your driver to the point where you can actually afford to buy another taxi and another driver, and then you can keep expanding your crew until you've got a fleet of cabs, which means you can tap on numerous targets at the same time, which is when it starts to feel like a clicker. Once you've got, like, 5+ cabs, you're like, tap, 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 tap. Also, other things flow onto the map, so blimps will come over, tap them, they explode and give you money in a tasteless shower of cash. Also, helicopters and things like that. And you just keep tapping, and all the numbers go up. And after a while, you start to wonder why you bother.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm not a huge fan of clickers anyway, so this game, as I said in the video, is not for me. So me slagging it off and calling it lame is sort of pointless, because, you know... There are people who love clickers who might be able to say it's better than this other clicker. But for me, it is just numbers keep going up, and it's numbers for numbers' sake. And you get more money so you can buy more cabs to get more money. and that's just it. You just keep doing that, and there's no point for me. I want a narrative to go forward, or I want something to happen. I want to get something good off the back of it, and that's not what these are about. It's an idle, time-wasting, click-click-click thing.
Mm.
The thing I found jarring about it, though, was they had to cut some of the music out of the Crazy Taxi port when they brought it onto mobile, because the licensing had expired for some of the music. So I think, you know, like the Offspring tracks, which are very famous for Crazy Taxi, weren't in it. There is an Offspring track in this one, and when you have a bonus thing that you click on, it suddenly kicks in, and you're Offspring, meh, 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 and then it just sort of falls silent again, and you're back to clicking.
Oh.
With, you know, a little bit of noise in the city. And it's really weird, because for a moment, it goes, ba 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 ba, and you're like, all right, yeah, right, you know, it feels like Crazy Taxi, and then it just stops, and then it's just quiet, and there's nothing, and all of a sudden, you feel a bit lonely and sad.
So like when you're in a silent disco and you take your headphones off.
Yes. You introduced me to the concept of the silent disco, which I kind of love. Yes, you take your headphones off and realise that we're all just standing here swaying to our own individual music and just an empty warehouse going...
Yep.
And this
basically,
is...
Basically, you hit the squeaking of shoes. The occasional cough.
Yeah, it's nightmarish. So, Crazy Taxi Gazillionaire. It's like a silent disco with no headphones. You can get it for free right now, iPhone, iPad, Android, if you want. And also, tying off the... Is this the final episode of this season of The Walking Dead?
It's the be-all and end-all. It has finished.
Right on. Okay, and you have reviewed it, as you have played through all the other ones as well, right?
I have. I'm a big Telltale fan.
You are The Walking Dead girl. So, it's all tied up. Was it a satisfying conclusion?
Actually, it was, which was like a very, very, very unusual for Telltale. Like, not going to lie. Because usually, especially with the Walking Dead stuff, because the past two... Oh, spoiler alert here, just in case you haven't played any of them, I'm about to spoil them.
Cool, all right.
In, obviously, at the end of season one, we all know, like, we all felt the heartbreak.
Mm.
Our main character dies, and we're then in Clementine's shoes, and we have to go off. But that's kind of quite open. She's walking through a field, you don't know what's going to happen next, and then off you go.
Yeah.
The end of season two, you choose between Kenny and I cannot remember her name. And, you know, depending on which one you choose, that's the person you go off with. We've got Clementine as like a secondary character almost in this kind of random, weird version of The Walking Dead. But our actual main protagonist is Javier and his family that he's sort of trying to survive with. And the conclusion of that completely, completely concludes Javier's story.
No, like kind of cliffhanger thing. It's an actual complete arc.
Yeah, it's an actual complete arc. We're left with Clementine's cliffhanger because she then has to go off and find, you know, AJ, the boy.
Mm.
And we're kind of on that way. But that's Clementine's like next stage in life and stuff. Of course, she's a teenager now and she's grown up and she's badass as always because she's my girl. But yeah, but Javier's story is just kind of like, it's just done.
That's good. Well, without spoilers, we can say that you know, it's a satisfying conclusion. We're not saying how it ends.
Yeah.
But that's actually, good.
That's the other thing, is there's so many different choices. Like, there is legit, like, it used to be just be, you know, it's going to end one way or another. Now it's just, oh, you know, it'll end a certain way, but you can adjust all of the factors in between.
Okay.
Which was very unusual for Telltale.
People are wise to Telltale's game now and know that the choices are maybe superficial and perhaps don't impact the plot hugely. But if they give you, the trick is to give you the sense that you feel like you're doing something, you feel like you're having an impact, even if it's only an emotional one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it still falls prey to its regular tripes. I think I gave it like a 7 in my review of it, just because it kind of flopped a little bit. Like, the pacing was all over the place in that end second episode. Like, one of the characters dies who we've been following throughout the whole series. I wouldn't say who.
Mm.
And they kind of just die, and that's it. And then you kind of move on, and it's like, oh, okay. So that's the end of that then.
But it's The Walking Dead. Everybody dies at some point, and everyone complains.
Yeah, it's a zombie Game of Thrones.
Yeah, zombie Game of Thrones, exactly. All right, and so that's concluded. Now you can get the entire season, if you want to, out iPhone, iPad, at the minute. Android as well, probably. The other sort of release that's getting pushed to the front of the store this week is Bouncy Hoops, which... Yeah. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have.
Now, I'm actually slightly more in favour of this than I expected. I've also played this and done a video. So basically, it's Flappy Bird with the basketball hoop. By which I mean, a basketball hoop pops out the right-hand side of the screen, the balls are sitting there, you tap the screen, and the ball bounces in the direction, so it pushes towards the basketball hoop. And you can press the screen again and it will bounce even in the midair. And the idea is you've just got to get it through the hoop. Once it's gone through the first hoop, another hoop appears on the left-hand side of the screen. So you're constantly swapping sides. And the ball then, when you tap it, bounces ever so gently towards the other side of the screen. So you're constantly going back and forth and back and forth. The idea is to try and string your basketball hoops together, your shots. And the aim is to do it within a certain time limit. So you've always got maybe like, I don't know, 5-6 seconds on the clock. You score points by not letting the ball touch the ground in between jumps, by doing it really, really quickly. After you get 5 in a row, then the ball suddenly catches on fire and bursts into flame, and you get bonuses and multipliers and all that kind of stuff. It's very simple. It's, as is, you know, the Flappy Bird conceit. And it does it in a way that is not particularly new, just enough newness sprinkled over the top to make it slightly different and less aggravating, I think, than Flappy Bird. But it's sort of quite compulsive. I found myself playing it and not minding playing it.
That's all we can hope for in a mobile game, honestly. But this is Noodle Cake we're talking about.
Yeah, Noodle Cake are good. They do good stuff, Noodle Cake. Where the game works really well is when you're jumping through the air and the clock suddenly dies, everything goes into slow motion and the ball just falls to the floor. Now, if the clock stops just as the ball is over the top of the hoop, and it slow motion falls through the hoop, it reactivates again.
Oh, that's cheeky.
Which is a really good feeling. And it's kind of like that bit I said in the video at the end of the basketball movie. It's the bit at the end of Teen Wolf where you throw the ball and the clock runs down and everything goes slow motion and it goes... Doo,
doo. And just sort of bounces around the rim.
Yeah, around the rim, and then rolls around the edge and then goes through and you're just like, yes!
Yeah.
And I admit to making pretty much exactly that sound on more than one occasion playing this, which probably means something's working. In terms of it being just a one-hand touch, one-touch game, thumb, tap, 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 silly, silly, silly. You can upgrade and get new balls and all that sort of stuff. You get a billiard ball and blah, blah, blah. But just the core loop of it, it's simple, it's shallow, but I would play this. I'm ashamed to admit. It's sort of kind of quite fun. It is free. It's on the App Store. It's on Google Play. Bouncy Hoops be the name. And just a couple of other things this week, neither of which I've played these two. So Frankenstein Wars is a game that was... it's kind of an interactive storybook, I'd say, in the realm of the sorcery and stuff like that. So they developed previously Heavy Metal Thunder and Dead Man Diaries, which are also out. But this was kickstarted in 2015. Frankenstein Wars to me sounds like it's going to be like massive amounts of weird fantasy, but actually it's sort of 1800s France era, and you're fighting an army which is linked into the whole Victor Frankenstein tech. So the idea is that he's raised an army of Frankenstein's monsters and they're all bearing down on you. But it's all narrative driven. It's all choose your options at the end. It's £5 on both iPad, iPhone, and a little bit more expensive on Android. We'll take a closer look a little bit later. And also, Stolen Thunder. Basically, you got this triangular little craft thing. You swipe and tap to get it through a series of nodes, some of which got enemies in, some of which have got like bonuses, like extra lives and whatnot. And then you have to find a key to unlock the barrier. The end, it's all about trying to get the correct path to jump between all the different areas. It's neon 80s aesthetic and stuff. Haven't played it. Apparently, according to Christian, who has played it, take you around 2 or 3 hours to complete. It's sort of quite fun, bit tactical. It's 99p or 99 cents and out on the App Store right now.
Nice.
That'll do us then. Thank you for listening. Good to have you back, Em.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
We missed, and hope you enjoyed the E3 chatter. We'll speak a bit more about it when the event actually happens. So, until then, we will speak to you next week. Play it easy, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.